Hello, I'm Trevor Dan, and this is the weekly podcast from radiotoday.co.uk. And it's a bit of a milestone for us this week, our 200th edition. So thank you very much for your continuing support. With the backing of our sponsors, Broadcast Bionics, we hope to make another 200 shows for you at least. So where have we been celebrating our bicentennial?
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
We're in Amsterdam at the 8th annual Radio Days Europe conference and exhibition. This year there are more than 1,500 delegates from all over the world in the huge RAI auditorium and conference centre. And your first impression really is that radio must be an industry that's doing well. In the sessions, there's a refreshing sense of optimism and planning for the future. Some of the hand-wringing of previous events had got a bit tiresome, so it's been good to hear so many speakers introducing new programme ideas, new ways to reach audiences, and new ways to turn radio's continuing popularity into money. Now, in previous years, I've been that bloke running around with the TV camera interviewing speakers and panellists, but the trouble with that is you don't get to see enough of the sessions. So this year, I took in as many presentations as I could, but I did have the trusty flash mic with me. So for the next few minutes, I'd like you to meet five of the most interesting people I bumped into. The man responsible for sound design on the brilliant Radiolab, the designer of a digital editing system which might just drive me away from Adobe Audition, a former foreign correspondent who can explain the growing trend for what's called constructive journalism, and Matt Deegan, who'll tell us why Alexa and those other connected devices should be treated as radios. But first, one of the UK's highest profile broadcasters, who's been celebrating Radio 1's 50th birthday with Tony Blackburn.
Scott Mills, what did you make of it, Radio Days Europe?
This is my first one, Trevor, and I've got to say I really enjoyed it. I didn't think it would be this big, I've got to be honest.
It's huge, isn't it?
Right, yeah, and it's great, you know, like, I've just looked through the programme of the stuff that's on. I know Stephanie Hurst is about to go on and do a thing. I've been passed many a jingle USB, let me tell you. So it's good to see that everyone's here, a lot of the tech people, a lot of the jingle people kind of showing their wares, and actually a chance for people to learn about each other's radio stations. I mean, a lot of the people in our chat that I just did with Tony Blackburn maybe don't know a lot about Radio 1. They may know about the BBC, but not so much Radio 1. And I've learned more today than I ever knew about pirate radio. I didn't even know they had the Holland one, the Veronica and all that. So I think as a radio fan and as a consumer of radio and as someone that does radio, I think it's perfect, yeah, it's great.
It's interesting that you've managed to fill the auditorium talking about Radio 1.
Right.
It shows how interested the rest of Europe is in what you do.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I still think it's the case that Radio 1 is looked up to for young people's radio station, probably the best one in the world, definitely the best one in the world. And, you know, you just watch those videos of the stuff that we do, like Big Weekend Now and the Ibiza proms. You know, Radio 1's always done those kind of things really well. But more than ever, you know, they've kept up with the times. And, I mean, the live events are just on a different scale now.
Bob Shannon was saying this morning that it's important for all of the BBC networks to think about linear radio and not to be too distracted by what's been quite fashionable recently, all the, you know, getting clips on YouTube and on Twitter and Instagram and all the rest of it. Do you feel that as a broadcaster who's got to fill 2 or 3 hours yourself?
I've got an interesting view on all of the other stuff, and that is that first and foremost, I'm a radio person, and I want my first priority is to make it good when it comes out of the speakers, and that's always it. However, as I just said in the talk, I think there are moments which you can capture on camera, but they should be your best bits, and they should also be stuff that works on the radio and on the screen. If it doesn't work on radio, then you shouldn't really be doing it.
And just briefly, I know you've got to go because you've got to be on the telly in a minute. You're flying home tonight to be on Radio 2. Now, is that the beginning of a great new adventure?
Well, who knows? I'm signed up for Radio 1 for a while, but I have to say, I've got that nervous, excited feeling that you should have when you're doing something new. And even if you've been on the radio as long as I have, you know, I still get those, the radio butterflies. I'm excited. Yeah.
Good luck with that, Scott.
Thanks, Trevor.
Dylan Keefe, I feel like I'm in the presence of genius. You do the sound for Radiolab. Mm-hmm. It's one of the programs that I use when I talk to students as an example of how you should use sound to tell your story. Just summarize what you said in there about showing before you tell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think one of the things that I hear all the time in podcasts or any kind of audio storytelling is this tendency to explain something and then drop the sound for that. So I use the example of a radio story where we might say, so we got out of the car, and then you hear the car, the sound of the door closing. Then we walked across a gravel parking lot, and then you hear gravel, and then something else happens. So as part of my talk, I was trying to sort of drive home the point that it's way more surprising, way more interesting, and just elegant to hear the sound before you know exactly what it is, or to show and then tell.
You said it's a bit like when we meet people.
Yeah.
We meet them before we know them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly that. And so, yeah, and so it can be used in a whole bunch of different ways. And I actually tried to start the show, you know, if you were to rewind, I tried to start the show with a lot of heavy sound at the beginning of it for exactly that reason. Sometimes it's kind of surprising. Some voice just pops in and you're like, who is this person? Before you even know them. And I find that to be, that question to be way better than, here is this person talking and this is, and now they're saying this.
One of the other things I was fascinated by was you were talking about mixing this extraordinarily difficult program. I mean, this is hard work that you're doing, but you mix it at your desk wearing headphones.
Yeah.
You don't mix it in Abbey Road.
Yeah, no, we don't. No. I mean, the stuff that you can do now at a regular desktop is, or a laptop for that matter, is just incredible. I mean, I have the kind of technical tools, digital technical tools, that really emulate even mixing it at Abbey Road. It's really quite amazing. So I use those types of tools quite a lot. And
I should ask, actually, do you use Pro Tools?
Oh, yeah, yeah, we use Pro Tools. I use Pro Tools. I have a love-hate relationship with Pro Tools. I think most people have used it. It's like a 20-year relationship for me. And so, yeah, I use Pro Tools because it's the industry standard. And for mixing, it's definitely the best. But I usually compose, if I'm doing music, in Ableton, just because it's a easier. I used to compose a lot in Pro Tools, and it just got clunky. And when someone finally sort of hit me to Ableton, I just took off with it. And like I was saying before in the talk, I just think that a lot of people listen with headphones, and so I kind of want to know what they're hearing, and that's why I mix with headphones.
You're a sound designer, and most people who do that kind of work come out of being studio managers and engineers,
mm-hmm, yeah.
But you have a news background. I guess that's why you can use sound to tell a story.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's why. I went to music school. I was interested in scoring. I played music and I made records. But a lot of the work that I was doing when I got into radio was in news-oriented situations. My family is all into the news business. My brother is a news director. I think about that stuff a lot. And so it was a quick fit for me. And news programs, like On the Media, is considered to be like a news program. And The Takeaway was one that I helped build. And those are, so understanding how news works and the ethical dilemmas of news, for me, it's just like paramount and right in the forefront of my mind when doing this stuff. And it really, I feel, lends itself well to telling stories, like you just said. So, yeah, I guess I'm lucky that I have, this is probably the right medium for me. Probably, I think so.
I think you're quite good at it. Dylan, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Just to give you some idea of the scale of this event, let me walk you through the exhibition space, in fact only about half of it, where we can see people selling jingles and imaging, people doing various sorts of apps and software. There's a stand over there for background music. There's even a stand for the European Parliament, which, as far as I can tell, is drawing your attention to the fact that you can do your own OB from the European Parliament, should you so decide. And there's some people offering macaroons here, if you'll listen to them trying to sell you their marketing offer. There's the Association of European Radios. Of course, there's the EBU. There's All In Media, who make apps and various other things. There are some men in white coats over there, and we're still walking. And over here in the corner...
Hello, my name's Nick Dunkley. I'm the creative director at Hindenburg Systems.
And you're called Hindenburg because...
Oh, Trevor, that's a long story. Because I was doing a class on journalism in Denmark, and I had a teacher there who was fantastic, and he was talking about the reportage, you know, the dawn of history, and where does it all come from? And he told the story about the Hindenburg incident, where there was a journalist called Herb Morrison, who was out doing a test recording. And at the time, 1937, you didn't actually do recordings in the field. But they had a nimble little 50-kilo recorder that they had dragged out to Lakehurst.
It bursts into flames. Get it started. It's rising terrible. Oh, my, get out of the way, please. It's burning, bursting into flames, and it's falling on the mooring fast, and all the folks between us. This is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. Oh, it's 400 or 500 feet into the sky, and it's a terrific crash, ladies and gentlemen. It's smoke and it's flames now, and the flame is crashing to the ground, not quite to the mooring mast. All the humanity and all the furniture is speeding around it. I told you, I can't even talk to people. His friends are out there. I can't talk, ladies and gentlemen.
For the first time, actually, in American radio history, someone was there when a story occurred. So it was the dawn of history. And I heard that story. I was sitting there listening to it. I thought, that was absolutely fantastic. And everyone who did ever done radio must know about this story. So when I thought about it, I went to the name for the company that was specific for radio producers, bespoke for storytellers. So I thought, Hindenburg is brilliant. You know, only radio people would know about this. Did anyone know about it?
No, absolutely
no one.
Excellent. Well, your marketing may be at fault there, but
your
system is brilliant. Now, here is the thing. Many of us will know Adobe Audition, obviously, and Pro Tools. Yours is designed to do those kind of things, but in a simpler way.
Yes.
Just show me, as well as you can, without the benefit of pictures, because we're making a podcast, show me what Hindenburg does.
It's quite technical, but it goes on in the background. So what we're trying to do is make it simple for radio producers to get from what they have in their minds and get that on paper, on a workspace. And we're trying to get rid of some of the obstacles that you find on your way. So let's say if you wanted to import some music, you just...
So you've just gone into Finder, you've clicked on some music, and it's imported it into the multitrack.
Well, we've actually just dragged and dropped it. You can also drag and drop from iTunes or anything like that. But what happens is, as you drag them in, the system will automatically set the levels for you. We're using the EBU's R128 loudness algorithm to actually set the levels.
Oh, these are the glorious LUFs, which we learned about recently.
Exactly. And they really do work. They really are ingenious. The only slight problem there is with it is you have to do it by hand, which we'll have to do in the other system. You'll have to actually look at a LUFFS meter.
What you're doing here is just dragging and dropping these sound waves into the multitrack, and the software itself is deciding that needs to be a bit quieter, that needs to be a bit louder.
Yes. So it's balancing everything out so everything is perceived as equally loud. So you can go from classical music to heavy rock without the levels being all over the place. Now, all that is really interesting if you're a sound engineer. If you're a journalist, you don't care. You just want it to sound nice. And to be able to do a proper mix, you need to have some kind of reference. And here you do. We're giving you a reference. You know, if you just stick to this level on the narration, so to speak, and everything, mix everything around that so it sounds nice, you're good.
I've looked at some of your tutorials online, and I would advise people to go on to your site and look at those. Let's just hear the mix that you've created.
Simone and Kipski have been creating crazy sounds together since they were kids in the city of Utrecht.
My name is Catherine Gildenstedt. I'm a Danish national, had a career in journalism, news journalism in Danish broadcasting, television and radio, and also served as a U.S. correspondent under Obama's first term. But now, and I'm guessing that's why you ask me, I serve as the world's first director of constructive journalism in the Netherlands at a journalism school at Windesheim Journalism Department.
Now, I was fascinated by this session because I'll admit I'd never heard of constructive journalism. In a couple of sentences, what is it?
I think it's for a more accurate portrayal of the world, giving more perspectives and going against polarizing effect that journalism tend to have, not because we want it, but because of the way that journalism is conducted today, we can be a player in creating more polarization. So giving a more accurate portrayal of the world, I think, is the most important part of constructive journalism.
We've just been through in the UK the whole Brexit thing, and a lot of journalists are doing some navel gazing now, saying, did we cause this? Because we just looked at it in terms of, well, that's right and that's wrong, that's black, that's white, that's left, that's, you know, and we did we polarize the issue when actually people voting thought it was a more complicated subject than it was being reported?
I think you did. Not because you want to, but because of the way that we report in the news. It's very interesting if you dig into what is it that creates polarization. You can see a model where you have someone who want you to leave the EU and some the people who wanted you to stay. Those are the two poles against each other. We in news journalism go to one pole and interview them, and then we go to the other part and interview them what they said in the first poll. If you fuel that kind of conversation, you create more polarization because the middle ground becomes more weak because you never give voice to that. So if you want to be depolarizing as a journalist, you should first of all be aware of that and then try to report more from the middle or the concerns of the people and the substance there instead of going from Nigel Farage to David Cameron and back again.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth in that. And surely one of the things that we do is we are guilty of false equivalence, that we say, here is a man who says the world is round. Well, how are we going to balance that? Oh, I know, here is a man who says the earth is flat, and we interview them both and give them the same amount of time. And there's a lot of that in political coverage. Now, I guess constructive journalism says, no, wait a minute, you don't need to just do that. There's more to it than that.
Yes, and what you're pointing out is very important because we teach it in journalism school that fairness and balance is achieved if you have someone saying something and then someone who's saying something against that. But in reality, that's just two outliers and not balance or fairness or representation of where the people, the percentage of people really are. So making journalism students aware of that and teaching them how to do it differently is a very important first step.
So here's the thing. Let's say there's an issue facing the local council, which is, I'm just going to choose one off the top of my head, and it's going to be that our recycling bins are only going to be collected every fortnight instead of every week. Now, the way we cover that on a local station is we say, well, here's the man from the party that's in charge of the council, and they're going to tell you why this has to happen. And then here's an interview with the opposition party, and they're going to say why that's a bad thing. And then we stop and have the weather forecast. What should we do in that case?
Instead of always taking the decision makers in the studio first, in the first interview, maybe take the people in who are affected by this or the stakeholders of the garbage bins. What is the reality of them? Is it really a concern? What kind of ideas could they have to do it differently? Instead of taking the politicians or the decision makers in the first round, but ask the stakeholders. Another example could be a hospital. If we're closing a hospital, instead of talking to the politicians around it, talk to the nurses, talk to the doctors, talk to the personnel, talk to the users of the hospital. Is it really a problem? Could it be handled by driving to another nearby hospital? What are the pros and cons of centralizing hospital care? Kind of covering it through those stakeholders instead, and then maybe much later invite the politicians to react on the coverage you created from the people you could say, on the ground, or the people who have really their hands into the topic. That's a constructive way to approach it, because you get more perspectives instead of the black and white. And you also see that the politicians take it much more seriously when they are invited in to react on that kind of coverage, because it's anchored in the voters. It's anchored in the citizens, real voice of the citizens, and they are more respectful of that.
If you want to read more about constructive journalism and how stations in Germany and elsewhere have found that the approach actually does make listeners more interested in your news coverage and more receptive of it, have a look at constructivejournalism.org. Fascinating stuff. So congratulations to Anders and the Radio Days Europe team. There's plenty more about what the speakers had to say at radiodayseurope.com. Here's to 2018 in Vienna. Now, Stu Clarkson.
Yes, thank you, Trevor. Here are this week's top stories from radiotoday.co.uk. And Nation Radio can stop the rock. Ofcom's approved a format change request which takes the rock genre out of what the Welsh station has to do. The licence started life as XFM South Wales. As part of these changes, Nation's increased its number of required locally made hours from 10 on weekdays and 4 on weekends to now 21 minimum per day every day. BBC Radio Manchester and Lancashire's Alan Bezick show has been investigated by the BBC Trust. The late programme was found in breach of editorial guidelines after allowing a prisoner on air who spoke about having sex with children. Meanwhile, a presenter at South Wales community station BRFM has been sacked after doing a link that made offensive comments about gay and bisexual people. Ofcom found the station in breach of the broadcast code. More than 50 stations have now signed up for this year's Local Radio Day on the 26th of May. UKRD group stations are joined by the likes of The Bay, Lakeland Radio, Exeter's Radio X, Sunshine Radio, BBC Radio Oxford, and a number of community stations. Tony Blackburn is finishing his Bauer Sunday afternoon show on the Greatest Hits Network. He was kept on the show when the Magic AM stations rebranded a couple of years back. Tony's now doing two weekend shows for Radio 2, as well as slots on BBC Radio London, KMFM, and on a Friday, BBC Radio Berkshire. More departures from Radio X this week. Vernon Kay has left the mid-morning show after 18 months on the station. Ricky Wilson is also no longer on Sunday mornings. This all ahead of on-air producer Dave Masterman's departure. He's about to leave for Absolute Radio. And Clint Boone is also finishing his Radio X show and his Radio Manchester show as he begins weekday drive on XS Manchester this month. Katy Perry's been announced as one of the headline acts for the Radio 1 Big Weekend, taking place in Hull at the end of May this year. Little Mix, Kings of Leon and Stormzy among the other acts who've already been announced. And well done to Sarah Cox for completing her 24-hour 80s dance-a-thon for Comic Relief this week at Radio 2. In the period she was on air, donations reached more than £730,000. The final total's been going up since then. I particularly enjoyed the simulcast she did with Five Lives' Phil Williams late on Monday night. And then Scott Mills making his Radio 2 debut and playing innuendo bingo with clips of Radio 2 presenters. It's worth a listen back about 5 to midnight on Monday night.
And Steve seems to have got carried away while playing a track called Caribbean Blue in the afternoon.
That was me doing Enya.
Thanks, Steve.
Oh, dear. Oh, no.
Okay, next, one of my personal favourites, Saturday nights on Radio 2, Lisa Tarbuck. Oh, so much happens in that show, I love it. Lisa does have specific phrases that you might know about if you are a regular listener. However, not so much if you're not. I mean, for me, this really conjures up an image.
Oh, I love that song. Do you know, originally, that's from 1937. Imagine that. Oh, I love it. We run the gamut. We bum the gammon, don't we, here?
What do you mean? I think you have to be a regular listener tonight. Next is Richard Madeley, host of the Radio 2 Breakfast Show this morning.
Yes.
With a real insight into what happens at Richard and Judy's house at the weekends. My tip is don't arrive late afternoon.
I will be spending tomorrow building a brand new barbecue, having friends over for late afternoon nosh in the garden.
This feels all sorts of wrong on Radio 2, but it's for Comic Relief, so it's fine.
That's it for this week. More news, of course, every single day, as it happens, at radiotoday.co.uk.
Thank you, Stu, and congrats to Sarah Cox and the others. It's over £1 million now that's been raised. Fantastic job. David Lloyd after this.
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform.
Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk. David Lloyd,
Radio Moment. Let's start this week with some BBC announcers and newsreaders, shall we? It's 85 years ago this week that the first ever news bulletin was delivered from Broadcasting House. It was read by Stuart Hibbert.
The Foreign Secretary made his expected statement in Parliament today about the disappearance of the two Foreign Office officials, Mr. McLean and Mr. Burgess. Mr. Morrison said he had little to add to the Foreign Office statement of last Thursday. There had been no confirmed information of the whereabouts of the two men since they landed at St. Malo on the 26th of May.
BBC newsreader Stuart Hibbert in later years. This week, 4 years ago, it was a goodbye from one of Radio 4's familiar news voices.
Said it will withdraw support for Cyprus's ailing banking sector if the terms of an international bailout are not agreed by Monday. BBC News.
With Harriet Cass.
Harriet left Radio 4 this week in 2014. It's 12 years since we lost this voice.
So, goodbye, Home Service. Two of the best words in the British language. And still, I'm sure, the only answer you can give to the question, what is Radio 4?
The famous David Dunhill at Radio 4, who came to give me voice training nearly 40 years ago.
Heart is coming.
Heart always makes me feel good. Songs that I've liked since I was little, songs that I like now, songs that my mum likes. Songs for everyone.
It's 8 years since one of the biggest rebrands in commercial radio history, and this week the second swathe of Heart conversions began as we say goodbye to Fox, GWR, Orchard, Seven, Gemini, Lantern and South Hams Radio.
Good morning, welcome to the brand new radio station for the South Hams. Heart is finally here! Hey! Oh. Do you know what? I've never been this alive this time of the morning before. The whole of the Heart team is here. We've got everybody from reception to sales to the Heart Angels. Say hello, everybody.
Hello!
All very, very excited about the launch of Heart this morning. There is so much going on. A bit later, the Heart convoy is going to be across the road to the South Ham. So look out for those guys. You'll be able to see us around Kingsbridge, Totnes, Dartmouth, Ivory Bridge. A little bit later, I'm going to be going out.
South Ham's radio becomes Heart South Devon, later Heart Devon. We lost 2:10 too.
Hi, good morning. This is Breakfast with Foxy, and welcome to a brand new radio station for Berkshire and North Hampshire. It's 6 o'clock, and this is Heart.
Thank you, Foxy, and good luck on the Signal show as well. Right, it's our 50 years ago spot, and this week in that critical year for radio, the Postmaster General announced the second bundle of BBC locals, Brighton, Manchester, Nottingham, Stoke. But Manchester later withdrew. In the days before social media and mobile phones, if you wanted to get in touch with someone urgently, radio was probably the only way. And hence, 94 years ago this week, we had the first SOS message. Here's how they used to sound.
That's the end of the weather forecast, but now here is an SOS message. It's for Dugan. Will Thomas Burns Dugan, last heard of 8 months ago in the Birmingham area, go to the Glasgow Royal Infirmary, Glasgow, where his mother, Mrs. Unity Dugan, is dangerously ill.
The idea, of course, was that you might hear a message aimed at you, or someone else might realise it was for you and pass it on, as was the case with Linda Miller in 1958.
Apparently, they were parked outside of some hotel, and a man on a bicycle knocked on the car window and said, "Are you Mr. and Mrs. Miller?" And they said, yes. And they said, well, there's been an SOS on the radio. Your daughter's seriously ill in hospital. And then they started this apparently horrific journey back up to Sunderland because it was thick fog. And they had to drive all the way back up to see me.
Linda Miller, happy birthday to the SOS message. This week in 1969 was a very cold one. And at 5:01 on March the 19th, the mast at Emly Moor in Yorkshire collapsed. It had been the tallest freestanding structure in the UK.
The IBA owned an emergency mast. It was 200 feet high. To a television engineer, this is no more than a toy, so they gave it the childish name of the Zip-Up. By 3:00 on the following morning, it was leaving its store at Lichfield in the Midlands on its way to Emly Moor. It was so cold up there on the Pennines that no one could work on it for more than half an hour at a time. Yet, in less than 4 days, the signals were restored.
The collapse of Emly Moor this week in 69. There was a replacement mast, and Capital Yorkshire and Heart Yorkshire have had their aerials on it. Staying with bad weather, pirate radio now, and one of the most famous ships of all was the Mi Amigo, one of the original Radio Caroline ships, and this week in 1980, she sank in a storm.
Radio Caroline broadcasting on 319 metres, 963 kilohertz. Well, we're sorry to tell you that due to the severe weather conditions and also to the fact that we're shipping quite a lot of water, we're closing down and the crew are at this stage leaving the ship. Obviously, we hope to be back with you as soon as possible, but we'd just like to assure you all on land that there's nothing to worry about. We're all quite safe. Just for the moment, we'd like to say goodbye. Tom?
Yeah, it's not a very good occasion, really. I'll have to hurry this because the lifeboat is standing by. We're not leaving and disappearing. We're going onto the lifeboat, hoping that the pumps can take it. If they can, we'll be back. If not, well, I don't like to say it.
I think we'll be back one way or another,
yeah,
Tom.
I think so.
From all of us, for the moment, goodbye and God bless.
That silence speaks volumes, doesn't it? The end of the original Radio Caroline this week in 1980. We heard the other week that the BBC have completed a new financial deal which secures the long-term ownership and occupation of Broadcasting House beyond 2033. But it was this week in 1923 that the British Broadcasting Company moved premises from Marconi House to Savoy Hill.
This is London calling. Now tonight our chairman, Lord Gainford, is going to speak to you on this, the occasion of the opening of our new studio at 2 Savoy Hill, London.
As chairman of the British Broadcasting Company and on the occasion of the opening of our new London studio, I am glad to have the opportunity of saying a few words to our many thousands of listeners in throughout the country. The Broadcasting Company is not a monopoly. Last year, the manufacturers of wireless apparatus met together by invitation of the post office, as it was realized that broadcasting would have to be controlled by one broadcasting authority if the chaos which today is so obvious in America were to be avoided here.
That chairman's not to be messed with, is he? So with Magic Chilled launching this week last year...
From the people that bring you magic.
The end of gold in many areas on AM and DAB 3 years ago.
Playing the greatest hits of all time.
And Chris Moyle's breaking the record for the longest radio show 6 years ago.
I am not tired, I am not ratty.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Radio Moments!
Thanks as always to David Lloyd and Stu Clarkson. Stu will be looking after the pod for the next couple of weeks and I'll talk to you again in April when I'll have some top radio feature makers from Charles Parker Day in Sheffield. Till then, thanks for listening. And before I go, a special hello to Wim Brons, one of our Dutch listeners who I met while I was in Amsterdam. As they say in those parts, doei.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.